will talk today about measurement of black body radiation-induced transition rates between Rydberg levels of S, P, and D kind of Rydberg levels. And this work has been realized at the University of Pisa. And during these 2 days of the conference, I've seen several skylines, city skylines, that were fighting to get the most recognizable one. But I believe that the Pisa Tower really, it's a dead brain winner. Is it correct? Good. And so this work has been performed at the University of Pisa. It's been realized mostly by the students that you see here, their names. They are former PhD students, Archimi and Simonelli, and master students, the remaining one. And Oliver Morsch was the supervisor of all these students. And you know, all of you know Professor Arimondo, who is always part of our group. We also have collaborations, especially with the theoreticians, Beterov and Professor Beterov and Ryabsev, specifically for the topic of this talk. So Rydberg atoms, I don't need to stay a lot in this conference, but they are long-lived and interact strongly. And these are the main features that make them very interesting. So the lifetime scales as n to the 3, and the van der Waals coefficient as n to the 11. So for instance, if we consider rubidium atoms and n equals 70, the interaction energy for 10 micrometer distance is of the order of megahertz. It's quite high. And the lifetime is also quite long. It's approximately 150 microseconds. And as I said, these features are really important for many fields that have been addressed in this conference about quantum computation, quantum simulation, and even quantum metrology. And those Rydberg atoms give rise to strongly correlated dynamics. So for instance, typically, one considers to have a sort of two-level system, ground and Rydberg state, which are coupled by, with an effective Rabi frequency omega. And there is also some dephasing decoherence rate associated, which takes into account of the finite line width of the laser and also of the Doppler broadening, residual Doppler broadening. And in our case, in our experiment, gamma is much larger than omega. So what we have really is a system which can be described classically, like a two-level system, in which you have some excitation rate, which depends on the detuning. Depends on the detuning and also on the separation between two Rydberg atoms. So, for a potential, for interatomic potential of this shape, repulsive potential, there are two important distances. One is the blockade, the radius of blockade, which for resonant excitations, it fixes a distance below which the excitation probability is very small, drops to zero, you can say. And another important distance is the facilitation radius. When you have a laser, which now is detuned with the positive detuning, if you have an excited and already excited atom, the next excitation will occur with the highest probability at a distance given by the facilitation radius, which is where the energy mismatch of the laser compensates exactly the shift due to van der Waals interaction. And so you can have some dynamic of the spreading of the excitations in your sample, which is, as I said, strongly correlated. if you are resonant from the first atom, which create a blockade radius around it, you proceed exciting far away atoms, and further excitations are blocked. Their probability to occur is greatly reduced in between, for instance, here. Differently, for excitations with positive detuning, the process which occur is facilitated excitations. So starting from the first Rydberg excitation, there is this high probability which is peaked here at the facilitation radius on the two sides. And so the second excitation takes place, and this facilitation shell continues to expand in this way. And this is something that we worked in the past. We had a collaboration with the group of Igor Lesanowski, in which this strongly correlated dynamics occurs in a system which has kinetic constraints. Kinetic constraints is a condition for which you have that the excitation rate, so here this gamma, depends on the local environment. And so the transition happen only if the constraint is satisfied. And so here you have the, as a function of time, the number of excited of Rydberg atoms for resonant laser, for resonant excitation, with the red detuning and with blue detuning. So this blue data correspond to the facilitation process. So these strongly correlated dynamics we have explored in the past also in a more direct way in our experiment about van der Waals explosion of called Rydberg cluster. In this experiment, we used to create a quasi 1D chain of Rydberg excitations, which were created through the facilitation process. So starting from a seed, because otherwise the facilitation takes a long time to begin, if you are far detuned. So starting from a seed that was created resonantly, the facilitation process took place, so with the off-resonant laser, blue detuned, and a quasi 1D chain of excitation was created. This 1D was due to the structure, to the size of the excitation laser. And after some time, evolution time, we measured that the Rydberg atoms really were repelled. So the size of this Rydberg cloud was very much expanded as a function of time. And we were able to measure the size, the standard deviation, let's say more correctly, of the distribution of the Rydberg excitation, measuring the standard distribution of the arrival times, because our Rydberg are ionized and they are accelerated towards the channeltron. And of course, if you start from a broader distribution, the arrival time is also have a broader distribution. So we calibrated this in a proper way. And so we were able to extract indirectly the spatial distribution of the Rydberg itself. So these are all examples of strongly correlated dynamics which occur in Rydberg samples, just a few examples. But they rely in a very simplified model. Typically, this ideal model is where you have just the ground state and a Rydberg state, which is your target state. Could be some kind of SNS state, or P or D, depending on how you make your excitation. But so typically one considers some sort of effective coupling between these two levels. But first of all, in our scheme, we do the reader gate citation with a two-photon process. So we have first a blue photon, 420 nanometer. So we go in the vicinity of the 6P state, detuned from it. And then we have the infrared laser and the 1015 nanometer. Okay, let's neglect now the intermediate state. In any case, you populate the Rydberg, the target state, and then if you wait, of course, spontaneous emission must occur, and after some time, the atoms will be, all the atoms will be back on the ground state. And so there is some decay rate associated to every Rydberg state. And this simplified model with just some sort of excitation characterized by its effective Rabi frequency plus some decay rate is what has been used in this paper that we also realized in collaboration with the Lesanowski group, in which we were measuring at a very long, after a very long time, which was the stationary state of a system, in which you have these two competing effects, now the excitation to the Rydberg and the decay from it, characterized by rates, even in this case. So it's an incoherent process. The excitation is through the facilitation that I already introduced before. And here is a phase diagram which shows the number of the excitation in the stationary states as a function of the detuning and the Rabi frequency of the excitation laser. And you see that there are two different states, which one of them is the absorbing phase here in which there are no excitation at all. If the laser is very weak and very far detuned, at the end you have zero excitation and you don't go away from that state. That is what means absorbing. Or at the other opposite end, you have the inactive phase in which you have some steady state number of excitations which are fluctuating. So it's a fluctuating phase. And in between, there is a crossover between these two states. So as you see, all these predictions rely on a very ideal model, the one in which you have just two states, effective Rabi frequency and decay. But how ideal is our model? As I said, of course, we populate the target state, but we cannot neglect that very nearby there are, if this is the N state, there are the NP and the N minus 1 P states. The separation is only a few gigahertz if you consider N between 60 and 110, which is the region that we have explored experimentally. This means that blackbody radiation can easily couple as our target state to those P states. And once the atoms are transferred to the P state, they can go to other states, S or D. And from the D state, they can go to F state, and so on. So it's very complex what happens. It's not very ideal, really, our model. But how can we measure this? We wanted to go and look in details in what is happening here. So we want to make some Rydberg lifetime measurements. There are many, many groups that performed Rydberg state lifetime measurements. Here are listed a few. And what we have done differently from previous literature is that we really have tried to do something very systematic. So to explore a wide range of quantum numbers and states. So both S, P, and D states, to have a more comprehensive results, in a sense. So how do we perform our measurement, our lifetime measurement? So we start from a sample of atoms in the ground state, which are just from a magneto-optical trap. And we excite them to the target Rydberg state. These excitation lasers typically have a size which is the smallest one is 40 micrometer diameter. So it's just a column inside the MOT. So we have our few excitations. We try to work, we always worked with very low excitation numbers. The MOT rate, the MOT size was 300 micrometers, and we worked with an average of 3 Rydberg excitations only. So they should be very far apart, let's say 100 micrometer apart. So really they don't interact with each other. And then we apply some electric field, we ionize them, and we accelerate them towards the channeltron. They arrive at the channeltron after some time of flight, each of them, so it's with certain efficiency, which is approximately 75%. These are the arrival of single ions, and we count them. We just count them to know how many there were. But now we have atoms that can be transferred by blackbody radiation to all those states. And we have no way to distinguish in which state are the Rydberg atoms. We just know that we are able to field ionize them if their quantum number is enough high, let's say approximately 40. Below, we cannot field ionize. It's not enough field. So if we do this measurement, for instance, our target state is the 80S, and we just measure after some time, we field ionize and we measure the atoms, remaining atoms, what we are measuring is this ensemble that we call the state ensemble. All the atoms that are in every of these states are measured. And we see that the number of the atoms in the state ensemble decay with a certain, we can fit them with a single exponential. And this lifetime is huge, if you think about, if you compare it with what you expect for the lifetime of the ATS. So we want to really to extract from those data the information about the ATS, our target state only, how we can make. We can, after a certain waiting time, we can apply this depopulation pulse. So this is a resonant laser which transfers the atoms from the Rydberg state back to the 6P, from which they decay very fast. It's only 120 nanosecond lifetime. And so we characterize this process. So it was this in this paper, the excitation spectroscopy, this method. And in this plot, you see, it's a function of the excitation time. If the excitation laser is very intense, you have coherent dynamics, and so you have also these oscillations in the population as a function of time. Yeah, it's coherent dynamics between these two states. But if the excitation laser is weaker, lower Rabi frequency, it's just some decay from the target state. And you see here the time scale, it's relatively fast. So after a pulse, a de-excitation pulse of, let's say, 5 microseconds, which is still considerably smaller than the target lifetime we want to measure, we've seen that we can have a depopulation of the target state of approximately 95%. So we are able to trash away the atoms from the target state. And so we measure only the atoms which are here, which we call the support, all the states apart from the target state. And so we do this measurement, and the support data are these blue points. You see that they first increase because you have the transfer by blackbody radiation that is populating the support. There is the first increase. And then there is the decay, because they really decay out of the states that we can detect with our method. And now we achieve the information on the target state, simply making the difference. The target population is the ensemble minus the support. And these are the green data, which decay much faster. And now we compare the decay time, with always with a single exponential decay, of the target population with the theory. And as a theory, one is expected, here is a function of the NS state, you see from 60 to 110, more or less. And this we have calculated, this is what we expect from the black body radiation and the instability of the state. You can also, black body radiation, we calculated numerically with the ARC open source library that we have used, taking into account all coupling up to F states. So this is what you would expect for the target state, S, target state. And with the same method, we also calculated the expected lifetime of the ensemble state, which is this other line. And the data that we have acquired show that for the state, for the ensemble states, more or less, they follow the prediction. There is a trend which some noise, but we are not very far from what is expected. But for the target states, what we see is it's very interesting, because you see that there are clear anomalies in the target state lifetime. These anomalies here, it's one around n equals 70 and one around n equals 90 that we have measured. It's a huge variation of the lifetime, which is decreased around these principal quantum numbers. And we have repeated the same kind of measurement going up to the P states. For the P state, we had to make add an extra photon. It was a microwave photon with a three photon excitation. And you see that, like before, while the ensemble more or less is on the predicted line, even now you have some discrepancies for the target state. And in a region that seems related to the ones for the S state. And so what we did is we tried to find some enhancement factor that we should apply to the RF, to the black body radiation, to justify, to fit this measured target state lifetimes. So we have seen that if you consider in this frequency range between 1 and 14 gigahertz, an enhancement factor compared to the black body radiation, which is done, which is made by these three Lorentzian shapes, we found the position, the height, and the width of these three Lorentzian shapes by fitting simultaneously the data for the NS and the NP states. And the result of the fit is what you can see here as this dashed line, dashed blue line. You see that is going much better to fit the experimental data for both the S and the P state. So if we take the result of the fit, what we have obtained from the fit, and we use it to calculate what you would expect for the D state, you see that even in this case, even if the data are more scattered, so that's why we have not used them for the fit, the parameter that we have found before, also they are good enough for the D states that we have examined in the same range. So why we have this enhancement of the black body radiation around these frequencies? So these frequencies are in a range which is, it's called the L band, approximately 1-2 gigahertz, S-band, C-band, X-band, and they are used for GPS, mobile phone. You see here, it's long distance telecommunication, weather, Bluetooth, satellite communication. So every device that we have around us is more or less emitting in this region. And so we tried to analyze what was causing these anomalies. And we started making some tests. So putting a cell phone close to the cell, or putting here some wireless Wi-Fi. But really, the measurements were not changing. The lifetime measurements were not changed. If you take some measurement, for instance, here in the 90s, it was the same lifetime. So we made another test. We put some microwave source, which was resonant with the transition from 91S to 91P, just to induce transitions, to do transition for the 91S. And we calibrated the power of the RF, of the microwave reaching the atoms with some outlier towns spectroscopy. So we noticed that if we put this microwave source very far in another corner of the lab, not in sight of the atoms, we could see some effect with the outlier town spectroscopy. Then we covered with aluminum foil all the experiment. And we saw a reduction of a factor 4 in the outlier towns experiment. But we repeated the measurement of the lifetime, and the lifetime was unaffected by the presence of this extra RF source. So really, it's probably if it was transmitted by free space transmission, we had some sort of attenuation. We cannot exclude that it was transmitted through wires, in a sense. But anyway, we were not able to modify in all these ways the measurement of the lifetimes. And so the idea that it is just background microwave radiation really doesn't apply. But then the next idea is, could it be really the geometry of the system that we are dealing with? So these main feature around 70 and 90 are mostly due to these two peaks, in these two peaks here. These are the lowest resonant microwave modes that produce this feature. And why the geometry? Because we have this confined geometry, which is given by the cell. The cell, it's a glass cell, it's a Vicor cell, glass. And it has some reflectivity in this frequency range. It's approximately 20%. It's not very high, but it can make a low quality cavity, nevertheless. And this is another way to see our data, which is looking at the black body radiation rate experimentally measured as a function of frequency divided by what the Planck law says. So this is enhancement factor. You see that there are also some regions in which it's below one. It's not just enhancement if you look in details. So here, why the geometry is affecting so much this situation? So we have, as I said, this cell, and there are also previous work which examined the situation in which we are dealing with the objects, reflective objects in the microwave domain, which are at distances or have size which are comparable with the relevant wavelengths in this region. In this paper, for instance, they say, oh, you cannot apply just the Planck law to determine which is the black body radiation if your emitter is smaller than the wavelength of the radiation should emit. So one idea to go and modify using this geometrical effect could even be you just put a small sphere very close to your atoms and you should modify the black body radiation, or you put an object like the one that we studied in this paper, but it's not very convenient. But looking at literature, of course, there is always some answers. And there are some very papers by Arosh, Heinz, Kleppner, which examined already in the 80s and in the 90s the effect of black body, how the black body radiation is modified when an atom is in a cavity. And more recently, in this paper here by Joseph Fortak, in which they were measuring Rydberg lifetimes, they really explicitly say that, you see, the radiation, they have a cryostat that form an effective microwave resonator, which is altering the black body radiation spectrum. And so we looked also in our case to these alterations. And if you consider the geometry of our cell, this is the count of the modes in the cavity and compared to the Planck formula. So there is some enhancement of the mode, approximately, which correspond to an enhancement of the black body transition rates for the 90 states, like the one that we have observed. So you compare this simple calculation with our measurement, and there is some resemblance, no? In this region, we have a peak. Here, we have a peak. There is something that even our very, very not sophisticated model can capture. But now we can modify the cell. Next step. Let's try to modify the cell and see if now the count of the modes is changed. And this is reflected by the black body radiation rates that we measure on the Rydberg atoms. So we have some extra electrodes. You see here this some metallic mesh on these two sides, on this lateral, top and bottom. And the effect is that modified the prediction, these blue points. And if you look at the data, the new data are the ones here, the one with the white round points. And you see that really there is a peak which appears in a position which was not that one. But if you just move around a little bit the these plates, metallic plates, you can have a very different situation. It's quite complicated to know, to measure exactly what you have in your experiment and to model it. And moreover, all these, in theory, these calculations show that at a certain point, this rate should drop down. Should drop down because at that point, with this very high Rydberg state, all the excitation frequencies that you need are not allowed inside the cavity, which has some lowest bound on it. On the wavelength that he can accommodate. So what we have learned, so we are not able to observe really the lowering of these rates for such a high end. And one reason could be that we are very sensitive for this very high end to stray electric field. So to compensate electric field was a hard work in our setup. We were able to compensate, we believe, up to down to 15 millivolt per centimeter. And we did so looking at the Stark map of 110S Rydberg state, and so to calibrate in this way the experiment that had to be done regularly every day. So in summary, what we have learned, we have learned that Rydberg atoms are not so ideal to level system, of course, that there is a strong dissipation. We have measured a strong dissipation effect due to black body radiation-induced population transfer. And we measured deviations from theory that we believe are due to the geometry of the apparatus. And as an outcome of this study is that, of course, if it depends on the geometry, you can control to some extent, this dissipation by altering the geometry. So by making a cavity which has a better Q factor than the one that we have. And so this could be a nice and interesting way to try to decrease black body radiation rates, which is could be easier than going to cryogenic temperature. So that's all, and thank you for your attention.
Questions? Come on, Jim.
Thanks.
Just throw it.
It's probably safer on a theoretical physics building to just pass it. Thank you very much for the presentation. I am intrigued by the geometry effects of the black body radiation, and from what I understand, it's not the geometry only that affects the power loss, but more the local density of states within and outside of the body. So another way would simply be to modify materials. So have you considered that? The material of your geometry.
Yes, of course.
Have you considered that? And what would be the effects that you expect from that?
Of course, yes, that would be, yes. But in our setup, really, it's we don't have, for instance, we don't even have plates, metallic plates inside the vacuum chamber. So for us, the nearest surface close to the atoms is the vacuum cell. That's why probably it's dominated in this way by this low quality cavity, because that's the closest one to the atoms. But in other setups, yes, you could put a metallic cavity around your sample, which would have a greater effect. Higher reflectivity, microwaves.
Yeah, I have a follow-up question on this. I mean, your glass material itself is maybe not a perfect black body. I mean, it might radiate itself, sort of a spectrum of optically active phonons or, you know, that are thermally excited.
Also, so because this could be covered by some rubidium layer, maybe the cell itself. So,
do you think it's covered on the inside with the rubidium? Or?
No, there is contamination, of course, by rubidium atoms on the inside of the cell. It also could play some role.
but do you have, like, information about the spectrum of these excitations in the glass?
No, really, we tried in the past to de-excite to detach the rubidium atoms using UV radiation from the cell in order to improve the vacuum. And we did this honestly, we had a BC at that time, and we didn't see a clear effect on the lifetime of the BT. We did this because, you know, it was a common belief that you could detach and clean your surfaces using UV radiation.
But what I had in mind was more a microwave spectrum of your glass cell.
The microwave spectrum.
Yes, so if you go through and just measure the absorption of your cell in the microwave domain, there might be resonances that are...
Yeah, it's always a little complicated because you need to calibrate both your efficiency of your emitter and the efficiency of your detector, which changes with frequency. So it's never absolute, and you cannot compare to different frequencies in this way and to see you have here enhancement and there it's a suppression. That's complicated. It's something that we taught and we tried to do, but we realized that they are always very monochromatic. Efficiency is always very well picked. So.
One last quick question. No, let's thank Donatello again.